There's a lot of talk these days about something called secular humanism. This is nothing more than a $10 word for worldliness. It is how the world thinks, talks, and acts. People of the world who are worldly do not understand the Christian mindset, which is, or at least should be, developed as a result of his study of the Bible. People in the world behave as if they know that this world is all there is and all there ever will be. Thus they reach for the gusto. If it feels good, they do it. Not only this, but they make it strange that you do not run with them in the same flood of dissipation, speaking evil of you, 1 Peter 4 and verse 4. But I want to talk this morning about gambling. What do I mean by gambling? Gambling is defined as the wagering of money or something of material value, referred to as the stakes, on an event with an uncertain outcome, with the primary intent of winning additional money and or material goods. Sometimes people say, well, I just set aside enough money for entertainment, and that's my form of entertainment, but you might ask them if they say that, well, what if you win? Will you turn down the stakes because you've already got the entertainment? And of course, most people will not turn down the winning. Even though they've already been entertained, and I wonder how much entertainment there is involved in throwing money away, which is what you're doing if you don't win. The event may be a sporting event such as a football or baseball game, a horse or dog race, a card game, or the random selection of a lottery number. And let me just say, though bingo can be a harmless game, if you pay for the card hoping to win, then bingo becomes a lottery. And so for that reason, if it's played for money, then it also would be money or prizes, also would be gambling. Now, here are some gambling stats. The National Council on Problem Gambling is an independent organization not funded by the gaming industry. It reports that 85% of U.S. adults have gambled at least once in their lifetime, 60% in any given year. About 1% are pathological gamblers, clearly addicted. Problem gamblers account for another 2 to 3%. Legal gambling is available in 48 states. Hawaii and Utah are the only exceptions. 6% of Nevada adults may be problem or pathological gamblers, twice the national rate. 2% of adolescents in Nevada may be problem gamblers. 10% of Nevada's youth are considered at risk to develop a gambling problem. You can understand why Nevada would be a little higher than the national average, because Nevada was the first state to legalize gambling, New Jersey, I believe, being the second state to do so. One of the scariest statistics is reported by the Oklahoma Association for Gambling Addiction Awareness. The survey of Gamblers Anonymous members in the United States found that 48% had considered suicide and 13% had attempted it. That gives you a little idea of how badly a gambling addiction can affect one. And then there's some gambling quotes that I think would be good for us to look at. Gambling, the sure way of getting nothing from something, Wilson Misner. And of course, the attempt is to get something for nothing. The safest way to double your money is to fold it over once and put it in your pocket, $10. I've lost enough money to build a casino, Samuel Lewis, rueful 19th century gambler. Jack Yeltsin said there's a very easy way to retire from a casino with a small fortune. Go there with a large one. Gaming is the mother of lies and perjury, John Salisbury, Bishop of Chartres, 1135. A proverb, in effect, there is a fool and a thief. Gambling is a vicious evil that corrupts our youth and blights the lives of adults. It becomes the springboard for other crimes, embezzlement, robbery, even murder, J. Edgar Hoover. Two writers of antiquity wrote, by gambling, men are led to fraud, cheating, lying, perjury, theft, and other enormities, Tacitus and Marcellinus. John Gates, once a multimillionaire, I don't think there's any relation to Bill Gates. I couldn't find any indication that they were related. He advised, do not gamble, do not bet on cards, do not bet on horse races, do not throw dice. Gates play bridge for $1,000 a point and match tennis for $1,000 a turn. He lost all he had and died broke in 1911. I'm forgetting my source. I looked for it again this morning. I couldn't find it. But I did find another source that indicated he did not die broke. So I don't know whether he died broke. But he did die in 1911 as a result of a unsuccessful operation in France. An operation that he waited too late to have. Gates was also known as John Benedictian Gates. He won some $70,000 on a horse race in England, having bet $6,000, but the rumor got started that he had bet $1,000,000. And so the rumor gave him his nickname, John Benedictian Gates. Again, I don't know that he died broke. I couldn't find a verification of that, but I did find this quote somewhere on the internet. Well, what is wrong with gambling? Why is gambling wrong? Is gambling specifically identified in the New Testament as being wrong? No, the word gambling, I don't think, even occurs in the New Testament. Some people have the mindset that, well, you know, something isn't even mentioned in the Bible. If it's not called by what we call it, then how can you say that it's wrong, that it's bad? Well, if gambling involves principles that are inconsistent with biblical principles, then, of course, it's wrong, and that's why it is wrong. Godliness with contentment precludes gambling. What do I mean by precludes? Precludes means to prevent the presence, existence, or occurrence of, make impossible. For example, the insufficiency of the evidence precludes a conviction. That's what a district attorney might say, so they're not going to prosecute because they just don't have enough evidence to convict. I was watching a program yesterday, and the police woman was so certain that the man was guilty, she was turning over every rock looking for evidence, and somebody asked her if she could prove that he was guilty. She said, if I was on a jury and the evidence I had was presented to me, I'd have to let him go, but I know he's guilty. And fortunately, and of course it was fiction, she did find the evidence. But if an individual is godly and he is content, he will not gamble. That's what we mean by godliness with contentment precludes gambling. That person who possesses godliness with contentment will not gamble. Where did I get this information? In 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 6 through 9, Paul writes, now godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into this world, and it is certain we can carry nothing out. And having food and clothing with these, we shall be content. But those who desire to be rich fall into temptation and a snare and to many foolish and harmful lusts which drown men in destruction and perdition. People who gamble are not content with what they have. Now again, they will try to justify gambling. I heard one fellow that he had bought a lottery. No, he was passing on a chain letter. He got a chain letter. And according to the chain letter, if nobody broke the chain, eventually everybody in the chain would receive so much thousands of money. Well, I'll just get part of the church. And he pushed him, and he's going to give a very small portion of it to the church. But that doesn't justify the thing. And of course, chain letters are illegal in the United States. And of course, with the advances on the internet and email and all that, chain letters are kind of a thing of the fact, but they're chain emails now. And they do the same thing, hold out promises of money. But that idea that if I can just accumulate it, well, what are you going to do with it? We'll carry nothing out of this life. And we all need to have the attitude of Job. The Lord giveth, the Lord taketh away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. And just be content with our lot in life. Having food and clothing with these, we shall be content. Or as the King James says, let us be content. Content with that. But a person who gambles has a desire to be rich. One fellow said, I noticed, I didn't get it down, but I think I can remember it. He says, most people do not gamble to win, they gamble so they can gamble again tomorrow. But some people are just trying to play catch up because they owe so much money. If I can just keep on gambling, eventually I have a big enough win so I can pay off my debt and maybe have a little more left over. But they just keep getting bigger and bigger, deeper and deeper, and they forget the first law of hole digging is to stop, or holes is to stop digging. And they keep on doing that. In 1 Timothy 6, verse 10, Paul goes on to say, for the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil, for which some have strayed, from the faith in their greediness, and pierced themselves through many sorrows. That verifies what J. Edgar Hoover has said. That leads to all other forms of vice. And so we need to take that into consideration. Then Paul goes on to say, 1 Timothy 6, verses 17 through 19, command those who are rich in this present age not to be haughty, nor to trust in uncertain riches. That's what a gambler does. He's trusting in those uncertain riches. But in the living God, who gives us riches in all things to enjoy. Let them do good, those who are rich in this present age. Let them do good, that they be rich in good works. It's all well and good being rich in material things. But that's not going to get you anywhere. Or it may get you somewhere on the earth, but it's not going to get you anywhere with God. The only way to get anywhere with God is to be rich in good works. That they be rich in good works, ready to give, willing to share, storing up for themselves a good foundation for the time to come, that they may lay hold on eternal life. People who gamble are not generally willing to share. They ward it off themselves. And when you win in gambling, somebody else loses. Now, some have said, well, you know, it's no different from investing in stock. Yes, it is different from investing in stock. When you invest in stock, you are taking a risk. You are risking money in hope that the person you're investing in or the stock you're investing in makes money. If the stock you're investing in makes money, you make money because you invested in it. If the stock you're investing in loses money, then you lose money because you invested in it. But when you gamble and win, somebody else loses. See, in gambling, somebody loses and somebody wins. In stocks, if somebody loses, then the person who invests loses. You only lose when the person you invest in loses. So it's not a win-loss thing with investing in stock like it is with gambling. So godliness with contentment precludes gambling. Also, putting covetousness to death precludes gambling. Covetousness is one of those things where it's a put to death in our life if we are characterized by it. For you died and your life is hidden with Christ in God. When Christ, who is our life, appears, then you also will appear with Him in glory. Therefore, put to death your members which are on the earth, fornication, uncleanness, passion, evil desire, and covetousness, which is idolatry. Notice that Paul identifies covetousness with idolatry. He's not saying that the two words mean the same thing. He's saying that covetousness is a form of idolatry. Why is that? Because whatever it is you covet is coming between you and God. And it's the same thing as worshiping an idol. And so covetousness, in effect, is idolatry, though the word doesn't mean the same thing as idolatry. And we're to put all those things to death. We're to quit committing fornication if we're committing it. We're to quit being unclean if we're unclean. Quit the evil desire. Quit the passion. Quit the covetousness. Put those things to death. That means we cannot and will not be gambling. In verses 6 and 7, because of these things, the wrath of God is coming upon the sons of disobedience, in which you yourselves once walked when you lived in them. So here they had lived in them, but now they were living in them again. They had not put those things to death, and they needed to do that. They were becoming once again sons of disobedience. In Acts chapter 20, verses 33, the Apostle Paul said to the elders of the church at Ephesus, I have coveted no one's silver or gold or apparel. We're going to tie this in with some of the other points a little later when we come back to Acts chapter 20 and look at verse 34. But covetousness is to be put to death, and putting covetousness to death precludes gambling. You can't put covetousness to death and continue to gamble. It's impossible because gambling involves necessarily covetousness. Also, the work ethic precludes gambling. The work ethic has been taught by God since the beginning, or since right after the first sin, When Adam was told, recorded by Moses in Genesis 3:19, "In the sweat of your face you shall eat bread till you return to the ground, for out of it you were taken, for thus you are, and to thus you shall return." So Adam, once he had sinned against God, he was driven from their home. It has been said, not rightly so, that he ate them out of house and home. They were told, "In the sweat of your face you shall eat bread." It became much more difficult even to get the produce of the earth, because then thorns and thistles and that sort of thing became prominent on the earth after that sin. And so hard work is what an individual is engaged in. In Ephesians 4:28, "Let him who sows still no longer, but rather let him labor, working with his hands for his good, that he may have some to give him who has need." Not only are we to work so we can meet our own needs, we're to work so that we can help meet the needs of others. Not the needs of anybody that will not work, because over in 2 Thessalonians 3:10, Paul writes, "For even when we were with you, we commanded you this, if anyone will not work, neither shall he eat." And so when he says over here that we should work with our hands at what is good, that we may have some to give to him who has need, those who will not work are excluded from that. And so those who have need here, obviously, are those who have need in spite of their desire to work, but because perhaps they are unable to work or unable to find work, through no fault of their own, they're in need. Those are the people we help. But anyone who will not work, they're not to eat. And so we don't take care of those. In Acts 20, verse 34, after he said, "Yes, I have coveted no man's silver or gold or apparel," he said, "Yes, you yourselves know that these hands have provided for my necessities and for those who are with me." But sometimes things that everywhere Paul went, he was supported by the churches, but not everywhere. USPS, the United States Postal Service, isn't all that proficient. But they didn't have anything even like that back then. And while Paul would stay for months and perhaps even years at places, there were times, I'm sure, when what money had been sent to him by different churches would not catch up with him. And there were times, such as in Corinth, when he had to labor with his hands. When he was in Ephesus, as he was talking to here, he's in my leader, talking to the elders of the church at Ephesus. He's talking about the 3 years he was at Ephesus on that second missionary journey. Third missionary journey. He's coming back from that now. He said 3 years. And he says, "You yourself know these hands are provided for my necessities and for those who are with me." So while he was at Ephesus, he wasn't being fully supported. He was working with his hands. Not only to provide his own needs, but the needs of those who are with him. Not everybody that was with Paul had the ability to make tents. And perhaps they didn't have any abilities that were profitable to them at that time and place. And so Paul took care of them, as well as himself, with that which he made, with his the product of his own hand. And so that was Paul's thought process: not to covet any man's silver, gold, or apparel, but to take care of those that depended upon him. And he did that. And so Paul believes in the work ethic. He taught the work ethic. The work ethic precludes gambling. There's a fourth reason that gambling is wrong. Loving your neighbor precludes gambling. If you love your neighbor, you'll want what's in his best interest. You'll want what's best for him. In Matthew 22:37-40, Jesus said to him, "You shall love the Lord with all your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind." According to Mark and Luke, he adds all your strength. This is the first and great commandment, and the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets. You love your neighbor as yourself. You don't want what's his. You don't want what's his. You won't try to win what's his. You won't buy a lottery ticket so that you can win all the money and keep somebody else from winning the money. You have somebody say, "Well, I just do that for entertainment. Or I just want to find fun." The Hope Scholarship, by the way, the Hope Scholarship is now in danger because people are rising up and they're not buying the lottery tickets in Georgia like they used to. I heard that on the radio the other morning. Which gave strength to the idea And I'm not saying it's true. All I'm saying is that there is perhaps some element of truth in it, that the lottery is a tax on stupidity. If people are wise enough and they realize they can't afford to waste their money on lottery tickets like they used to. And again, you love your neighbor, you want him to have what he needs. You don't want to deprive him of anything. Verse 10.4, let no one seek his own, but each one the other's well-being. And in Acts 20 and 35, as Paul continues this talk to the elders of the church of Ephesus, I have shown you in every way, by laboring like this, that you must support the weak. And remember the words of the Lord Jesus, that he said it is more blessed to give than to receive. That's not the thoughts of a gambler. A gambler doesn't buy a lottery ticket. He doesn't buy a horse racing ticket. He doesn't play 21 or blackjack to give to somebody else. No, because he wants to receive. He wants to win at blackjack. Or he spins the wheel because he wants to win. He wants that number ball to fall in his number, to fall on his color. Why do you think gambling is legalized in the state of Nevada? Do you think these gambling houses exist so that people can have their, like, oh yeah, come and gamble, and, well, you can win 25% of the time. Well, who's going to win up 75% of the houses? If the odds weren't in their favor, they would not be in business. Many people don't think about that. And of course, you've got your reservations where the Native Americans, to be PC, have their casinos, and they're exempt from Social Security tax, they're exempt from income tax because they've not been assimilated into the population of the United States. So a reservation basically has the same status as a consulate. When you go into a consulate, say a consulate, a French consulate in America, that's French soil, that consulate. And when you go on a reservation, you're not in the United States anymore. You're on the reservation. That's separate and distinct from the United States. And what's that? They're not subject to income tax, not subject to Social Security tax. Gambling shows a lack of love for my neighbor. If I really love my neighbor, I want only what is for his good. When legislators talk about putting casinos on the state line so they can prey on the greed and weakness of our neighbors, they reveal the harmful assault that gambling really is. Can I, in good conscience, support something that preys on the weakness and indulges the worst instincts of the precious people around me? I cannot, in good conscience, do that. So let me never preclude gambling, but there's a fifth reason why gambling is wrong. Gambling involves too great a risk. I'm not talking about the money that you risk. I'm not talking about the other material goods you might risk. I'm talking about your soul. Then Jesus said to his disciples, if anyone desires to come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whoever desires to save his life will lose it. Whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. For what profit is it to a man if he gains the whole world and loses his own soul? For what will a man give in exchange for his soul? For the Son of Man will come in the glory of his Father and his angels, and then he will reward each according to his works. If I was to buy a lottery ticket and win multi-millions of dollars, it could cost me my soul. Because you can't take it with you. That's what Paul said. We brought nothing into this world, we can take nothing out. And somebody else can get it. As I mentioned before, I don't know what John Gates' financial situation was when he died, whether he died broke, as that one quote suggested, or whether another online biography suggested he left his fortune to his wife and children. But he didn't take it with him, if he had anything. And on the judgment day, he'll stand there with no more than I will. To stand there with his soul in the balance, as I will, and as you will. And our eternal destiny will be dependent upon how we conduct ourselves in this life. Galatians 6:7-8. Do not be deceived. God is not mocked, for whatever a man sows, that he will also reap. For he who sows to the flesh will of the flesh reap correction, but he who sows to the Spirit will of the Spirit reap life, for everlasting life. So gambling is sowing to the flesh. It is not sowing to the Spirit. It is antithetical to everything that the Bible teaches.